Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the True Turf Super Series. Great pleasure to be to welcome and have with us today Steve Chappell, who's the Director of Agronomy at the Teignmouth Castle Club, or Golf Club we'll call it, in UK, in Scotland. Steve, welcome along.
Thanks very much, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. And as we start, just before Steve and I were chatting, and Steve was saying he had to just nip up to the castle earlier to do some work, I said, that's a pretty cool thing to say. What's it like working at a place for the castle, mate?
It's pretty cool, actually. It's a great spot. We're located, I guess we would be the southern part of the Scottish Highlands. Mm. So, it's a lovely old, it's an old estate, covers 800 acres of beautiful Scottish countryside.
Absolutely. And we'll go into it a little bit deeper later on, but you've got a pretty big job ahead of you at the moment. There's a whole course redevelopment or reconstruction mm-hmm. going on. So plenty of things to do, but we'll touch on that a little bit later. Firstly, you've had quite a journey in the turf industry. How did you get started?
When I was back at school, way back, I wasn't the most attentive of students. All I ever wanted to do was play cricket, to be honest, growing up. And unfortunately, as a lot of people that want to have aspirations to play professional sport, I wasn't good enough. And my parents basically challenged, by the time I was 17, 18, they kind of said to me, look, you're going to have to get on and do something. So I got a job as a trainee groundsman at a lawn tennis club for a year as an apprentice. And then a job came up at Bath Golf Club and my in the southwest of England. My grandparents lived in Bath. They'd seen it advertised in the local paper, told my mother. She told me to go and to contact the club, and I'd played golf, but hadn't really ever considered that it could be a career. Basically went to Bath Golf Club, had an interview, got the job, and within a couple of weeks it was like a hand going into a glove. I just loved it. I loved the whole aspect of it. And that was 35 years ago now. And my career kind of developed as I went. Ended up in South Wales at Neath Golf Club as the head greenkeeper there. It was an old James Braid Mountain Heathland course. And I was I turned 40 when I was there, and I'd had a good career, and I'd done a good bit of volunteering at tournaments and made some good industry connections. But my aspiration to manage a tournament venue, I felt, would probably pass me now at my age. I was kind of, I turned 40 and kind of figured that was it. But I was still very much in love with the job and the profession. And then in 2011, I got the opportunity to become the head greenkeeper of the PGA Centenary course at Glen Eagles, a venue that I'd been to a number of times volunteering and shadowing, and I knew the guys up there really well. And they had an opening there to oversee the redevelopment of that course ahead of the Ryder Cup in 2014. So, I went up there and worked with Scott Fenwick and the team, and that was a fantastic experience. It was a career fulfillment, I guess. Hosting the Ryder Cup was amazing. The children had grown up and grown up, and we had the opportunity then at the end of 2017 to go and work at in Europe. So myself and the wife had always kind of fancied the idea of living abroad. Somewhere warmer, getting away from the Scottish weather for a while. So we moved to Slovenia, and the owners at Royal Bled Golf Club, they'd undertaken a redevelopment of a golf facility that had opened back in the 1930s in the former Yugoslavia. A really beautiful golf course, Swan Golf Designs. Howard and William Swan had done a remodel of the or a renovation, I should say. They hadn't really butchered the golf course much, and new greens, tees, irrigation system, etc. They upgraded the facilities there. So, we were out in Slovenia for 5 years. Had a great time out there, really loved it. Beautiful country, nice culture, creeping bent surfaces, yeah, that was a great experience. And then obviously the opportunity to come back to Scotland, to come home, if you will, came up last year. So started here in Teignmouth for Discovery Land Company at the beginning of June of last year.
Yeah, that's so, a great journey in turf, that's for sure. From those early days, well, I suppose in a lawn tennis club, moving through to the opportunity to be responsible for I think you're involved in two Ryder Cups across the journey, and to have that experience in Europe too. It's a magnificent story, and one that I've had the opportunity to speak to a number of superintendents recently, and there's quite a few that have done that opportunity to go to Europe or other places to I suppose show their skills and develop new ones as well.
Yeah, I think I guess I've been pretty fortunate, I think, in my career to have experienced a lot of great things and met some amazing people. And you know, when I look at my network of very close friends, it's all through the turf industry, you know, so the turf industry has given me an enormous amount. I've put myself out there to get those opportunities, I have to say. So, you know, you have to extend yourself sometimes. But I would wholeheartedly, recommend to any, younger people or not even younger people, but anyone who's looking to progress or just broaden their horizons and opportunities to don't be afraid to get out and look at what's outside of your boundaries and your comfort zones and volunteering. I mean, volunteering, got me involved at Celtic Manor with Jim McKenzie ahead of the Ryder Cup in 2010, and that kind of whetted my appetite for wanting more and starting that whole journey to take me to Glen Eagles and then on from there. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm hoping I've got a few miles left in the tank to get this development over the line. We're looking to finish off the construction for the end of October, all the seed in the ground on the back nine, and then get her ready to start accepting some member play for next summer.
Yeah, so it's a complete redevelopment, effectively, of the club you're at now at Teignmouth, isn't it? So it's you've taken everything off and you're starting again, pretty much.
Basically, yes. Yeah. So there was a James Braid golf course here that was opened in the mid 20s. And then that was redesigned and renovated a couple of times through the 90s and 2000s. And then the estate pretty much through a couple of developers kind of failing and so on, the estate was kind of, I'll say, derelict. The castle wasn't derelict, but the estate basically, no one had played golf here for a large number of years and everything was overgrown. And yeah, the decision was taken that we would do a renovation of it. Bo Welling Design were appointed as the architects. So we worked closely with Bo and Scott Benson. And they've done a really nice job of reimagining, taking aspects of Braid's work and kind of reimagining that. And it's going to be a lot of fun to play. It's not a long golf course. We're only 6,500 yards long, so we have no aspiration here to host tournaments or events. It's not what the golf course is here for. The golf course is here to act as a facility for our members and the owners that are going to be living on the property. We have 160 home sites to develop on the property, and the castle is basically going to be the main hub of the estate.
Yeah, and well, that's what it is. It's clear, as long as you've got a clear vision of what you're wanting to do, and you can 100%. Be the best at that. That's all you need to. That's all you need to achieve. You don't have to hold a tournament. It's about the enjoyment of the members and the people that are going to be using the golf course.
And that's what our game is. You know, our game is and our vision and our mission is to produce a, you know, if we needed to hold a tournament, if someone phoned up and said, we want to hold the Scottish Open, that isn't going to happen. But if they were to say that, at a month's notice, we would be ready to host that event. So we're maintaining, or we will maintain, very very high-end surfaces, so it's tournament standards without the stress of tournament golf.
Yeah, Absolutely. Well, tell us a bit about the redevelopment so far, because it is a big job, a massive job to build a golf course. And I suppose, especially over there, you're getting certain, you know, not to put anything on Scottish weather, but it is coming out of winter here. And it's about 27 degrees today. You've only got really small windows of time, I suppose, to be able to do the job you need to do.
Yeah, our growing season is certainly restricted. We wouldn't experience soil temperatures consistently into the double figures probably until May, and we'll start to lose those soil temperatures back end of October. So we can still grow grass, and we'll certainly maintain grass here during the winter. We don't experience a lot of snow cover where we are. You know, obviously there'll be frost and cold weather and rain, but as an environment, it's, you know, once we're established, it will bring its own challenges, of course. But getting the golf course construction through now, it has been through last winter, was an interesting experience. We're very lucky. We're sitting on old river glacial deposits. So it's a very free draining site. It's natural. There's a lot of natural sands and gravels and that kind of stuff. So she does drain well. We have put an extensive drainage system underneath the golf course, and then we're sand capping the whole golf course with sand that we're actually screening from site. So we're producing our own sand cap material. So the only imported sand we'll use is for the greens. The greens mix, so the USGA spec greens and the bunkers. Everything else is coming from property.
Yeah, so a good sustainable way to develop a golf.
Exactly. Yeah, we're trying to do everything we can to minimize the impact or our impact on our environment here and the wider environment, you know, locally as well. So, yeah, by producing our own sand, we've obviously managed to reduce the amount of vehicle movements coming through Aberfeldy and so on. We have had a little bit of disruption in the village of Kenmore bringing sand through, but that's been managed and limited, and that's now done. All of our sand cap material is on the property now, so we're pleased about that. And we're looking at utilizing anything. I mean, at the moment, I've got some guys working on. There was some oak trees that came down a few years ago, which we've actually milled into sleepers to put on bridge decking. We've got to build three bridges to cross a couple of burns on the golf course. So we're actually using our own timber for those purposes. We're working with a lot of local ecological groups and ornithologists as well, doing a lot of bird surveys, bat surveys, and everything we can to make sure that we're, you know, whilst there's been an element of disruption with the golf course construction, which is inevitable, because we're a large estate, we've managed to mitigate the impact of that largely. You know, a lot of the bird life, deer, hares, all that kind of stuff have just moved to other parts of the estate. We recently had a veterinarian in to do a deer survey for us. He did one last year, and he's come and repeated it at the same time of year. And our deer population has actually grown across the estate. So we imagine that when we get to the golf course being finished and grassed and completed for next year, then we'll probably start to see deer back across the golf part of the estate and so on. So we'll need to keep an eye on them. But it's a good project. It's a big project. It's a big development. It's brought a lot of attention, good and bad, to the area. But the local opinion is very strong that, you know, we're doing some good things, and we're trying to employ as many local people as we can. That's obviously a massive plus for the local economy. So yeah, it's good. But I'm pleased with where we're at. We could always be hoping to get things done a little sooner. But in general, yeah, we're in a good spot.
Yeah, that's right. And look, it's great when, as you say, they use the word reimagined, you know, when the golf course can be reimagined and renewed, I suppose, rather than lost as well.
Exactly.
And the investment comes in. It does mean then that there's a greater focus in the community. But
as you were saying, you know, the sustainability measures of golf these days, directors of agronomy like yourself and superintendents around the world are leading the charge in sustainability and looking after the turf and the environment that surrounds it. So it can only mean if there's an investment in it that, you know, there's positive things to come out. So you're partway through the process at the moment. Mm-hmm. You've got a number of holes grassed, I think, and there's still obviously some work to go. So how many holes are grassed at the moment?
So we've got five holes that sit in front of the castle, which we refer to as the loop. So we've grassed those, and they're activated now. So when people come and stay in the castle to view the estate, they can play a five hole loop, or they can play it two or three times if they like. The rest of the front nine, so that will form holes 2 to 6 of the front nine holes. Holes 1, 7, 8, and 9 are constructed, sand capped, and seeded. They were seeded a couple of weeks ago, so we've got grass coming through those now, which is great. The driving range is shaped, and we're just starting irrigation and drainage install in there this week. So that'll be a 2-week process to get that done, and then we can sand cap and seed there, hopefully for the middle of October. Holes 10, 11, 12, 13 are pretty much all complete in terms of irrigation, drainage, shaping, all that kind of stuff. Sand cap is about 80% complete in that block of holes. So hopefully by kind of the back end of next week, we'll be in a position to start seeding off those, that block. And then 15 through 17, bulk earthworks are done. So it's really just shaping. And then obviously the drainage and irrigation crews running through and so on. And then 18 is shaped. It just needs to be drained and irrigated and then ready for sand cap. So our target is to get all of the shaping, all of the construction work, the sand capping and the seeding done by the end of October. And if we can get seed in the ground on everything by the end of October, then I think we'll be good to see us through the winter with a coverage. We should still get some germination and semi-establishment, especially from the dwarf rye elements and the bent grass. And then we'll kind of just nurse her through the winter. And then when we come into the spring, we've got something to work with to bring her on. And then say the intention is to get golf out here as an operational 18 hole facility, for the summer of 25 here.
So a lot to do between now and the end of October. How do you go with managing all of that? Obviously you've got stages where you've got grass on the fairways, there's irrigation, there's drainage, there's still some construction and shaping going on. Talk us through from your role now and how you're managing those various projects that you've got on your plate.
So it's a great question. I do kind of sit back at the end of the day sometimes and kind of wonder what we've achieved today, and then how we what we're going to do tomorrow. But in general terms, I mean, my day starts kind of 6 a.m. I'll be here in the facility. David Hay is our golf course superintendent. Davo joined us a year ago. He came down from Trump Aberdeen. So him and his family have relocated to the area. So Davo and I will have a conversation about what we're going to be doing in terms of the loop. We'll go and chat with the guys. And then he will take care of the setup and the running and the day to day on the loop. And then once that meeting's done, I'll generally bang through some emails, check on some stuff, and then I'll basically head out to site. We'll check through I'll walk through the seeded areas, just see how they're looking, touch base with the irrigation contractor. Optimus Irrigation are installing our Rainbird system here, so I'll touch base with them, make sure everything's good. I like to put my eyes across everything, and then I'll meet up with Sol Golf's representatives here, talk to the shaper, just spend the day kind of wandering around, sometimes aimlessly it feels, but wandering around the property. I'll touch base with our director of golf, Chris Campbell, who we've got a great working relationship with, David O'Donoghue, who's our general manager. So we'll touch base with all the ops teams and the ops guys. So it's There's a lot of meetings, the development team meetings. Obviously, we keep in close contact with SEPA, from regulation of water and the environment and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, there's generally always something to keep me busy. I really like the 6 o'clock in the morning because no one else is about. It's really quiet, and yeah. I really like when I'm leaving site in the evening. That's kind of often my favorite part of the day because, we're getting lower sun now at this time of year. You get great shadowing across the property and it's quiet and, it's quite nice to sometimes take a moment to just sit back and actually look across the property and just yep. kind of take it in.
Absolutely.
Our property sits in such a wonderful location. I truly believe the golf course that we've developed here kind of enhances that part of the property. It kind of sits within its environment. We've got 64 veteran trees from the original design landscape from the 1800s, which the golf course has we've kind of protected through the construction or reconstruction, remodeling phase. So they kind of give the golf course some maturity straight away, which is great. And it has a real serenity about it. The site is it's a very calm, peaceful site. It's beautiful.
Mm. I suppose where we've got to be able to take those time to look at what we're achieving in this industry. It can be stressful. Yes. We've just done another super series episode with a guy called Mike Knoll, who's a cover feature on Green Keeping magazine in the UK this month around mental health. He's got mental health, sobriety, all those other sort of things. There's a lot of pressure when you're out and various stakeholders. So I think it's always important to take that time to, as you say, whether it's in the morning driving in or driving out, to look at what you achieve and take a breath and go, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think all too often we can get caught up in the stress and the rush of the day and I've experienced and managed golf courses with four or five guys as a team, to 40 guys as a team, and I know what it's like to run with a tight budget and a small team and still try and deliver and exceed our member and customer expectations. So it doesn't matter at what level you're at, there is, and sometimes the stresses can be worse at the smaller clubs and the lower end because you're trying to do more with less, which is never easy. I think it's massively important that we take the opportunity to reflect on our own achievements and look at what we've done and be proud of that. Everyone needs to just take a breath sometimes and have a cup of coffee or a bottle of water or whatever, and just take 5 or 10 minutes out of your day to just decompress.
Exactly right. Now, we did see a post recently, shot to some fairway rolling going on out there. Tell us a bit about that. What were you looking to achieve? And I did another series of discussion recently with Tom Nicolai from Michigan State University.
Yep.
And we were talking about the greens of yesterday, the fairways of today in relation to height of cut and all those other expectations. So, be interested to see what you're looking to test or find out.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? So back when I was at Glen Eagles, we were looking at dew removal on fairways. So when we weren't mowing, we kind of felt that as part of our customer journey, if we're setting the golf course up in the morning, if we're not mowing fairways, and we can get quite thick dews here lying in central Scotland. So we should probably de-dew the fairways. And it's like, well, what's the most effective way and the most efficient way of doing that? Dragging a hose, a rope or whatever. And obviously, we do come under some fairly strong kind of disease pressure here with that, especially in the shoulder months, So, and I was at the GIS and I listened to Dr. Nicolai talking about rolling and the effects of rolling on dollar spot essentially dollar spot, and also weed growth and all, a whole number of things. And it kind of, this was kind of, I would say mid, you know, it was 2014, 2015, that kind of time. And it kind of triggered. So I did a bit of research on this and looked into it. And at the time there was kind of, there didn't seem to be a sensible option to be able to roll or remove dew by rolling on fairways and so on. And I moved to Slovenia, and I kind of, it was always in the back of my mind, and we used to get really high dollar spot pressure there. So it was one of the diseases that was a real, that was a real struggle for us. So we kind of looked at various different things, and you know, we touched on sustainability earlier on. So instead of just reaching for a bottle of something and spraying three or four times a year on 20 hectares of fairway, it's like, well, there's got to be a better way of doing this. And it kind of, my mind went back to these thoughts about rolling and that kind of stuff. So we looked at, you know, we had some just standard roller units for a triplex, and we started playing around with that on fairways. But obviously, to triplex your fairways is just not really practical. So we used to remove dew and this, that, and the other. And when I came back to Scotland, I was talking with John Bateson at our John Deere dealer here. We were going with some John Deere equipment and stuff. And he said, I got talking about fairway rolling and stuff. And then he said, well, I've got a set of True Turf rollers. You know, we had an old fairway, John Deere fairway mower here, which we were going to use for the growing. And I said to him, well, can I give him a run and see how we go with it? So he delivered them, you know, put them on. We used them on the loop. And it's like, do you know what? I really like this. So for me, we're kind of trying to tick a number of boxes. One being, obviously, moisture management, surface leaf wetness, to remove the dew by rolling when we're not mowing, to ease disease pressure as much as is possible, to increase presentation on days that we're not cutting. And I'm really interested to see, because there has to be a change within the plant, the physiological change in the plant, that rolling does something to the plant. Now, I you know, exactly what that is, I don't know, but it obviously stimulates something. And it's going to be really interesting for me to see moving forward, because this is something that we do regularly now. So whenever we don't mow, we roll. And it's going to be really interesting to see. So from a disease man, and we've got a control area which we're actually not rolling, because, you know, not really going to know it's working if we're not comparing it against something. So that's the kind of thought process behind it. And it's, you know, from a time management point of view, it's quick, it's easy, it's clean. So that's kind of where I'm trying to go with it, really.
Excellent. Yeah, we'd really be interested in finding a bit more once you've looked at that control plot and the findings you get. And something we've been working on with Tom is looking now at how we, let alone have the ability to add to a second-hand older unit, but also come up with a toe-behind fairway roller that is designed for fine turf grass, not just a single roller, but using our triple roller heads. So that'll be coming out later on. But certainly, you know, when we look at fairway height cut, it's getting pretty close in some ways to what greens used to be. So where we can be utilising rolling to, and as Tom says, to create the or activate the good bacteria in the soil and around the plant to provide that healthy, sustainable position, rolling is certainly delivering that. So because you're certainly looking at going down that GEO or GO certification once 100%, the course is open, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's something that's been on my to-do list for this summer is to start to engage with Jonathan and the guys at GEO to get us onto that journey. So it's a journey we went along with we entered into at Glen Eagles and we became a GEO certified property in 2014, which was great. But we want to, we certainly want that stamp of approval. It's like an independent an independent thing that, you know, we can, you know, it's easy for us to say, well, we're doing all the right things and we're minimizing our inputs, which we are, and we're really very careful with our water usage. We're careful with our, you know, our management of habitat, our native area creation, our trees, our tree planting, our tree maintenance, and all these kind of stuff. But I mean, GEO certainly covers that, but also more of what we're doing in the wider estate. So we really want that kind of validation from an independent body to actually say, yeah, you guys are doing the right thing. And if we're not, or if we can improve, how can we improve and where can we make those improvements? And I see very much that, you know, for us to produce high quality playing surfaces, there is always going to be a need, in my opinion, there is always going to be a need for chemical use at some point. But everything that we can do, and not just chemical use, and I don't really like the word chemical, but I'll use the word chemical, fertility, irrigation, we have to do these processes at times. The key thing is striking the balance between how we get that high quality playing surface with the minimal amount of inputs. And I've certainly seen throughout my career that that can lead to a negative. If people go too far the other way and go too lean, that then brings in trouble. Anthracnose is obviously a good example of that. We've seen an explosion of anthracnose activity in the UK and I guess through Europe probably over the last 5 to 10 years. And a lot of it's on the back of reduced fertility. You know, so the plant needs, to me, the grass plant is the same as the human body. It needs fuel. Sometimes it needs medicine. But the stronger and healthier we can make that grass plant or human body, the more resistant it is going to become when there is a cough or a cold or a flu going around. You're more likely to be able to resist it yourself without the intervention of antibiotics and so on. And I think, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts when I'm driving or if I'm out walking around, if I want to try and clear my mind a bit. And I listen to Rich Roll quite a bit, the American kind of ultra athlete marathon guy. And you know, and Rich has a whole number of different guests on. And he had a physician on talking about, you know, basically the dependence upon antibiotics and the problems that it's led to worldwide. Sorry, I'm kind of getting off track here a little bit, but it's kind of, you know, I think that, you know, I you know, we're very fortunate to be able to be maintaining and managing this property. So it's important that we do the right things and we do the right things well. And ultimately that has an impact for us, you know, on the bottom line, because if I'm not spending, you know, I mean, a fungicide application per hectare in the UK, if we use the round number, say the sprayer, a hectare of fungicide in the UK is going to be, say, £700-800. Okay. So if we're having to go out and spray fungicides on our fairways, and our fairways are big here for an 18-hole golf course, we're going to have pushing 30 hectares of fairway. Yeah. There's a lot of short grass. It's the way the golf course has been designed. So, you know, from an economic point of view, I don't really want to be spending that money on that. I'd rather be spending it on something else. From an environmental point of view, I don't really want to be putting that into the environment, even though that we know the chemistry of modern day pesticides is far advanced from what we used to have. And, you know, we still get a bad rap on the golf industry side for being not very good for the environment. Yeah, yep. Agriculture probably does more harm than we do by a long, long stretch, I have to say. But there's, you know, that's the road that we need to be going down, basically.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And where we can, as you say, you know, it's quite an investment when you're putting chemicals or fungicides or other things, applications in, if we can find a better way to do it through use of rolling or other practices, then we've got that budget then to invest in continuing to grow and enhance the facility. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
keeping my eye on the over your right shoulder there is that great Ryder Cup flag from Gleneagles there. It's might just touch briefly on, you know, your tournament experience. We've got a President's Cup about to come with it. It's the one we get sort of excited about in Australia because we do get a few of our players, but there's nothing like a Ryder Cup to get that passion in with the game. So tell us a bit about your Ryder Cup experiences and what it was like to manage the team and the through the tournament.
So I was fortunate enough to start that journey in 2010 at Celtic Manor. A mind-blowing event, not just because of the scale of the event, but just the way it all panned out and the weather and what Jim and his team did there was nothing short of miraculous, to be perfectly honest. And to be part of that was quite incredible. And that really whetted the appetite for really high level event. I'd done European tour stuff before, but the Ryder Cup was like the pinnacle of that. Just the scale of it was just off the charts, really. And, obviously, because I'd moved to Gleneagles in 2011, went out to visit with Curtis Tyrrell at Medina in 2012, and was on property for 2 weeks with my best mate, Lee Strutt. We went out and we worked with him for a couple of weeks, and that was just a great experience to experience a Ryder Cup in the States. And kind of when it came to 14, kind of felt as though we had all the processes in place. There'd been a lot of investment in the golf course, which was great. And we, you know, myself, John Miles, my deputy at Gleneagles, we'd sat down with Scott Fenwick, the director of agronomy, and we'd come up with a plan of how we wanted to do it. We had four teams and four team leaders. So the basis of it all was really about clean lines of communication. So at Celtic Manor, everybody did the same job, but you were independent of each other. So there was guys mowing greens, fairways, bunkers, tees, etc., but everyone kind of moved through the site, not together. So, you know, they had their route, but they were, but it was the same guy doing the job. At Medina, Curtis had teams. So you had teams and you had an allotment of holes, and that team moved from hole to hole together. And then within that team, you had someone mowing greens, fairways, tees, etc., rolling, changing holes, breaking bunkers and whatnot. But at Medina, you had a different job within the team every day. So there was kind of that you weren't getting consistency from day to day because, you know, people were raking bunkers slightly differently or they were, you know, whatever. So I used that kind of learning experience to put the team element, the sectional maintenance element, but the people within the teams did the same job. So when our permanent guys and when our volunteers came on property at the start of the week, you know, if you were mowing tees in team one, so you were covering that section of golf holes, you were mowing tees all week. That was your job, you know. And then in the afternoon, we had sort of mid-round set up and afternoon jobs. And actually, when the event came, the event week came, we'd had really good lines of communication with Paul McGinley, the captain, and so on in the lead up to the event. David Garland, who was the director of the event, the tournament director, and Eddie Adams and Richard Stilwell, who are the agronomists for the European Tour that were on property with us. Everything just went beautifully, and you know, we allowed the team leaders, we had a team leader for each team, and I would communicate directly with them, or John would communicate directly with them. We would get their data measurements, we'd get all their readings, we'd get all the stim, so everything was compiled, but I only had 4 points of contact rather than 20 points of contact, and it just made the smoothness of the operation just run beautifully. So it was it was great. I'm not going to say it wasn't stressful because it was. Yep. There was always from 7 a.m. when the players started to come to the first tee on the Friday and Saturday. They were a bit later on the Sunday, but, you know, from early morning till everyone was off the property, in the afternoon, you just kind of had that knot in your stomach, just waiting for the radio to go or waiting for someone to say, there's this or the other. We had a few things pop up during the week, but nothing that we couldn't solve. We had a deer run across a green, and so we had to go and do a little bit of repair work of that. But no, other than that, it was a great event. Brilliant experience. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Loved it.
No, that's great. We look from afar, as I said, from over here at the Ryder Cup and go, wow, what an experience. And we can only imagine what it feels like, that sense of achievement once that final putt drops or that final match is finished on Sunday for the agronomy team to go, wow, what a great experience that would be.
I must admit, it was, I made sure all the guys were down on the first tee for the singles going off. Mm. We'd appointed all of our full-time crew. We'd appointed them as match rakers and divoters. So with each of the singles matches, we sent out a match raker and guide just to clean divots as they went, so they could walk inside the ropes for the final day. And it was kind of a thank you to them for all their hard work. Some of the guys had been on that property for 10, 15, 20 years. So it was a great way for them to, really get a sense of what they'd achieved. And then when the final group finished, all of the agronomy team met behind the 18th green. So we were all sat inside the ropes looking down onto the 18th green when I think it was Victor Debusson, the Ryder Cup had been won obviously by Donaldson on 15, but when him and Zach Johnson, they came up 18 as the last group, and everyone was coming up the 18th fairway behind them. And I don't know, I got quite emotional, I have to say, at that point. But it just felt like, once that putt dropped and it had finished, it was like there was just a great weight off your shoulders, and you could kind of breathe and enjoy what was a very long night.
I can imagine.
Celebrating. So. Yeah,
well, I'm glad
fun.
To hear as well that you're accomplished at remedying deer hoof prints, because it sounds like you might have a few that you might have to deal with across greens and bunkers coming up soon.
We've got a healthy population of roe deer on the golf part of the estate. We've actually got red deer here as well, but thankfully they stay more on the woodland part of the other end of the estate. So as long as they stay that way, I can cope with the roe deer.
Well, Steve, I know you're a very busy man. I've taken up a lot of your time. We really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you as part of the Super Series. We wish you every success over the next, 6 to 12 months with the finalisation of the development. We're looking forward to seeing the outcome of at Tamworth Castle once it's all completed.
Yeah, no, Nick, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for asking me to be part of this series. I think it's a wonderful initiative, and it delivers great information and insights for everybody in the industry. So, no, thanks for that. And I look forward to keeping in touch and letting you know how we're getting on.
Good on you. Thank you, Steve.
No worries. Cheers.